I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 109 of Season 6 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Dana Nachman, award-winning documentary producer. Welcome back to the show, Dana.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me again.
It's great. It's great having you, especially when it's on the weekend. Why not?
Love the weekend.
Yeah. So Minute 109 begins with George trying to calm down Nick and ends with George trying to give Clarence some advice. So yesterday, what we dealt with was, you know, George and Clarence were in the bar and Nick started getting a little bit too fidgety about the whole fact that, you know, he just wants them to try to find a way to order their drinks. That's it. Doesn't want anything else from them. You know, and you know, we talked a little bit about the fact that Clarence was trying to decide what type of drink he wants. You know, does he want some flaming rum punch? Does he want mulled wine? All those things. And this minute begins with George basically interrupting and saying, Nick, just give him the same as mine. He's okay. Okay. And then George turns to Clarence and goes, what's the matter with him? I never saw Nick act like that before. And Clarence gives a great response. He says, you'll see a lot of strange things from now on. So it goes back to what we've been talking about, you know, all week, basically, or the last few days. The fact that despite Clarence being very simple-minded, he already knows, I guess, instantaneously, the various changes that have now happened in Bedford Falls / Pottersville. You know, so he didn't need to quickly learn, you know, about the history of everybody. It's something that a lot of movies deal with, this type of thing. You know, like when something is changed due to time travel, you know, do characters automatically have all the new memories along with the old memories? You know, is it something that's instantaneous? Is it something that takes a while for it to like sink in, or, you know, or do they have to relearn things or whatever? And I mean, they do it nicely here that it's basically all instantaneous for Clarence.
Right. I mean, I guess here you have the benefit of you don't really know what the powers of angels are, you know, that it could just be assumed that he, you know, knows everything and whatever the rules of this universe are, we as the audience follow along.
Right. I mean, the only thing that we do know is that it takes an hour for them to explain to Clarence everything that happened in George's life up until that point.
Right.
You know, which again goes against the idea that right now, if, you know, if we look at it from a theoretical perspective, if Clarence's memory is automatically recharged with all the new information, so why did he have to spend an hour learning about it? Couldn't they have just done that to him also?
Yeah.
Yeah, because they specifically say that you know, the amount of time that he has before he has to go help save George.
Right.
You know, he has an hour. It's not like they say, okay, sit down, I'm going to tell you a story, and then we don't know how long that takes place. I mean, that's one of the things that always fascinates me about movies, the idea of time. You know, you have... let's say on an average, you know, a 2-hour movie, you know, what is the time span over those 2 hours? You know, is it 2 hours, which, I mean, I always love movies that are in real time from that perspective.
Yeah.
Is it something that could last, days, weeks, months, years, decades, centuries sometimes.
Yeah, it is cool to figure out and how much do you really have to tell the audience. Sometimes you don't even really realize how long it's been.
That's right. That's right, because sometimes they need to give us little clues on the screen, and it says 6 months later or something like that, so that we know that there's been a time jump or whatever it is.
Yep.
But in this movie, they don't do that at all, which is
Right.
great. I mean, one of the things that obviously I've been talking about over the last few months is figuring out what year everything is that's taking place based on external information. Like we know that the dance was in 1928 because there was a newspaper which showed that Alfred E. Smith just won the got the nomination to run for president. So we knew the exact day
Right.
of when that was taking place. And then later on they say, okay, that's that he just finished college, so we assume it's 4 years later. Things like that.
Right.
Because this movie doesn't specifically tell you. I think nowadays, if someone was making a movie, they would making a movie like this, they would tell us more in your face type of thing what year this is taking place, each jump.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. It's not really that relevant. I guess the run on the bank, or the state, these things. It's a really interesting thing to think about because when this movie came out, it was all much, if like say for today, if somebody referenced COVID, right, that would place it very easily for us right now. But like 100 years from now, or 50 years from now. Some people who are watching it would never have experienced that. They'd be like, oh, when did that happen again? So it becomes a little more murky depending on how far out it is. But I think, a movie like this, like a Christmas movie, if you think about it, wouldn't necessarily, unless it's key to the plot, that.
Well, here it is key to the plot because they're trying to tell us all of the main events in his life. So we
Right,
should
but that could be any
theoretically.
time, really, right? I mean, in his life, the fact that it jumped when he was in college or wasn't in college for this, or he was working, it doesn't necessarily have to be placed in a year. We just have to know the time jumps.
Right, exactly. No, because like for instance, one of the things that we don't know the exact time frame is how long does it take from the point where he and Mary both realize that they're in love with one another till their wedding.
Right.
The assumption that I've made is that's about an 8 month jump because there
Right.
was a run on the bank in like February of 33, and we assumed that Harry came back at the end of school, so that was the beginning of the summer of 1932, that type of thing. So, but there's no proof of it. It's all it's a guessing game.
Yeah.
It's it
And
the
maybe they didn't even know. Like there's certain things like in a screenplay I'm writing right now. It really wouldn't matter what year it is. I mean, there's certain things that place it, right? Like it's in the modern day, but the modern day could be 5 years from now. It could be, and but then you have to be careful of what technology you use so that it doesn't get old really quickly, in terms of the phones and the, all the things that, but it doesn't really matter. It could happen 5 years from now, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. It's not
Right.
that relevant. But certain things do place it. Like the technology, if a phone has been, back in this one, if you had the wrong phone, it would be out of context, or the wrong record player or, whatever else they used.
But that's when you look at it from today's perspective. I wonder if in 1945, when they made this movie, they looked at it from that perspective too, by saying, "Oh, well, let's see,
Probably.
let's make sure that the continuity and the all the props are proper." Like today, people are, I guess, I don't know if
Changing
scared is
things.
the right word, but people are more concerned that they're going to get caught having the wrong props.
Yeah, no, it's true. I think it's just whether it's relevant for the plot line of how much you have to date it specifically. Yeah.
Okay, I mean, again, in this movie, they needed to date the idea of when there was the run on the bank because it had to be at the time that there were runs on the bank.
Right. Right.
And
Exactly.
obviously the whole World War II aspect of this movie, which they gloss over within, I think maybe a minute and a half. They talk about 4 or 5 years about everything that's going on in World War II, but the it's integral that the end of this story takes place, Christmas right after World War II. That's the way that the whole thing plays out. So
Yes.
yeah.
So they back timed it from there.
Yes. It's possible.
Yeah.
It does make sense that you would do something like it.
Yep.
I mean, I wonder if Capra was that intuitive about that type of information.
I'm sure he was.
Very possibly.
Yeah.
Because I mean we know that the character of George, we know when he was born, and we also know obviously what year Jimmy Stewart was born. So, does I mean it doesn't have to coincide, but it needs to be within a certain realm.
Yeah.
Even though he does play a character, I mean he was born a year after, he was born in 1908, and in the movie, the character is born 1907. So, it's pretty close.
Yep.
But he actually starts playing this character at the age of 20 or 21. At least he was, I guess, youthful looking enough at that point in order to be able to pull that off.
Yeah, he was
So,
in the range.
yeah. I mean, if I remember correctly, Capra really wanted Jimmy Stewart for this part. Like he'd used him before in Mr. Smith. He used him before in You Can't Take It With You. So, he knew what he was getting with this,
Right.
with this actor. So, why not, do something like this for
Yeah.
So we started talking about the fact that Clarence says you're going to see a lot of strange things from now on. And George looks at him and goes, "Oh yeah." And he goes, "Hey, little fella, you worry me, You got some place to sleep?" So I mean, this is just a strange addition of dialogue by having him say that. Is it
Yeah.
he sort of we talked a little bit the last few days about whether he looks drunk or whatever it is, but I think he like says it in a way that should he feel sorry for Clarence? Is Clarence the type of character that one should feel sorry for? And Clarence is just not even looking at George at the time. He's looking away, smiling, very, very pleased as to everything that's going on here.
I mean, they do set up like, I mean, obviously he doesn't know about this, but they do set up that he's a bit of an underdog. I mean, obviously, because he needs to get his wings. So I don't know. I do kind of feel sorry for him, and I can see that. I mean, and he is kind of off a little. I mean, it doesn't, I can see it.
Right. Okay. I mean that's fair. I mean personally, I think I mean Clarence is one of the best characters of the movie,
Yeah.
because of his simple the simple way that Henry Travers plays him.
Yeah.
I've seen Henry Travers in other movies, and he's never as endearing as he is here.
Yeah,
He's
he's
good in the other
definitely.
ones. I'm not saying he's not good, but this movie really shows how endearing he can make this type of character.
Yeah. No, he is good.
Because he has to play things in a way that is on the one hand telling George the way things are, and also sort of being he's I guess the man behind the curtain type of thing.
Yeah.
Because he ended up coming up with this great idea with George's help, but he came up with the idea that hey, this is what needs to be done, and let's go and do that.
Right. Yeah.
So I really like the way that plays out. And Clarence answers him matter-of-factly and goes, "No." He goes, "You don't? Huh? Well, you got any money?" "No." And he goes, "No wonder you jumped in the river."
He's still not getting it.
No. I mean, but I don't know how much I like the fact that George is basically saying, if you don't have a place to sleep and you don't have any money, you might as well just jump in the river.
I think he was making a joke.
Sort of. I think it's half joking with that, but Clarence takes him very seriously because his response is, "I jumped in the river to save you so I could get my wings." Then we hear the bell of the clash of the cash register, which will become very important in this later this week. Not in not in any of your minutes, but we will get there
Oh.
as to how important those bells are.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting the way that they give us a little bit of a foreshadowing about that,
Yeah.
about whether it's something that whether what's going to happen with it or not. Now,
Right.
do you know any other names for a cash register?
Not off the top of my head. I probably do if I think really hard.
Okay,
Let's see.
it's sometimes called a till,
Oh no.
a cash bucker, or an automated money handling system.
No. Nope.
And how far back do you think it goes where someone invented the, when do you think someone invented the idea of a cash register?
Jeez. 1871.
Very close. 1879.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. And do you know why? It was okay, so the man who created it or who invented it was named James Ritty. And the idea is that he owned a saloon in Dayton, Ohio, and he was fed up with the fact that his employees were stealing money from all of his profits. So
Huh.
they decided to do was create this compartment that that you can store money in, but also that it would make a ringing sound on every single transaction. And this way when the bell would go out, when you'd hear the ringing sound, so it would alert the manager that there was a sale that was taking place.
That's cool.
And then they can go
You
in and
have a
sit
reason to
there
open
and take a
it.
look,
Wow, that's funny.
I mean,
I feel
I
like a
think
lot of things were invented in Ohio. I don't know why I think that.
I think you might be right. But I just like the fact that the reason they added a bell was not because angels were getting wings, but it was to make sure that people aren't stealing.
Yeah, that's funny.
I think that's I mean, now you go to the supermarket and they have the self-serve ones. So no one's checking there.
I know.
That maybe they'll look on the cameras every so often or whatever it is. But it's just very interesting the way that they do that.
Yeah.
So the cash register makes the sound, and then Clarence says, "Somebody's just made it." And he goes, "Made what?" He goes, "Every time you hear a bell ring, it means that some angel just got his wings." And George just looks at him in a really, really strange way. And then Nick is looking around also and isn't really sure what's going on.
I think he's crazy.
Yeah, and Nick definitely thinks he's crazy with the way that he's dealing with that. And then he basically says, George looks at Clarence and goes, "Look, I think maybe you better not mention getting your wings around here."
Not smart.
No. I mean, he just wants to make sure that even back then, I guess people, if you acted very, very strangely like this, you didn't want to be concerned with the fact that someone might actually want to put you in prison or sorry, not in prison, put you away for being a little bit crazy. And I guess back then it was just as much of a concern as people nowadays would have that you don't want to say crazy things because someone might actually believe that you're crazy.
Exactly.
That's not a good thing.
No good. No bueno.
No, not at all. And that's pretty much the way that this minute ends. Did you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
Only that I really like, I was just looking at the shot continuously and I love the depth of it. You see the whole shot pretty much is this one shot, a two shot of them, a lot of it, this minute. And it's just nice with all that kind of depth and with all that stuff happening behind them. It just looks so, I mean, and then also the mirror shot of Nick is good. Like I love all the shots in this one.
So you approve of the shots that
Yeah,
that Frank
I just
Capra
really
did,
like them. They're kind of
the camera
rich. They're
angles.
kind of, yeah, they're just kind of rich with the depth. I like it.
And do you think it's easier to show more depth with black and white or with color, or does it make a difference?
I
I
don't
don't know the
know.
answer. I mean, I'm asking you
I've
from.
never worked with black and white, but I would think it's the same. But I'm not positive. It's a good question.
Okay, I like to have good questions.
Yeah,
I try.
I mean,
Yeah, I just,
look at
I know
if
you
you
have a
look
lot
at
more
people.
experience than I do with this, so I don't have any
Yeah,
experience with it. So there you go.
I mean, oh, I think it's really interesting when you like look at them. You can see people dancing, and then you see a layer of people sitting behind them, and then you see even a layer behind that. There's just a lot of layers for depth in this, which I think is really nice.
And they constantly keep the main focus on both of them. So, everyone behind all the layers between George, behind George and Clarence, you still you can't make out who's who or anything like that. It's just you see that it's hustling and bustling behind them.
Yeah, exactly.
It theoretically could just be the same two people moving back and forth. We wouldn't know.
Yeah, I mean, but even this, it's more than that, right? I mean, it's dancing, it's a lot of different scenes, and I really like that. I think it creates a like a world within the frame, which is really nice.
Yeah, I think they do that great. Thank you for pointing that out, because see, that's why I bring you here, to point out the technical aspects that I wouldn't have noticed it.
Good. Also one other thing that's here is like there, we always think in terms of coverage of a scene, to make sure that you have a lot of different shots to like, so if you want to go to a one shot, this is really not that many different shots, which, is usually what you would do if you're trying to save money. That's, they're always on a two shot of them. I don't think there's any time in this minute that there's just one of them, right?
Correct. Yeah. It shows both of them.
And that really saves, like, because if you were going to shoot with one of them, each of them, you would have to set this up again and do each of their lines separately. And they didn't, if they did it here, they didn't use it in the edit.
Right.
So it's really, it's economical.
Economical filmmaking.
Yep.
We can learn a lot from Frank Capra.
Yep.
You just have to have the right actors and the right angle, and there you go.
Yep.
Now, what maybe you can explain this to me, because like, what is the purpose of showing it from different angles? Meaning, where's the added benefit if you're showing two characters talking, and if they're sitting this way, not one looking at the other. One looking at the other, I can understand why you would need, to constantly go back and forth between the two of them. But here, when you have a shot where you're showing, I guess a side view of two people who are talking and sitting next to each other, so is there any added benefit to have coverage from other angles if you don't want to show, or is it only if you want to show something else that's going on behind them or around them or something like that?
I mean, there's probably a couple reasons. I mean, many reasons, but two that come to mind are, if you really wanted to like punch one of the lines of one of the actors, if it was very emotional or integral to the storyline more so than the other one, you might want to punch in and have a tighter shot of their face. So, because the two shot has to be more wide, like a medium shot.
Okay.
So, that's one reason. And another one is if you weren't crazy about the reaction of the second person who's not talking, you're stuck with it if you only have a two shot. So if you have a one shot, you and the second character who's not talking isn't reacting the way you'd want it to, you could go to the one, the singular shot.
Oh, okay. All right. Easy.
So that's another.
I never thought of that. You're right. It makes a lot of sense.
Or if you want, it's just like a tool in your toolbox to have more options. I want to concentrate more on Clarence here, so you go to his one shot. I want to show that he's clueless or whatever, and you show a reaction shot of him. You often see that where you're shooting one of their dialogue and then the other one reacting. There's a shot like that of Nick in this scene. Nick is just reacting to them,
Right.
so he's just standing there nodding. So they have that to use. So yeah, those are a couple of reasons.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. Right. So, since today is Saturday and Dana won't be with us later on Monday and Tuesday this week, so today we're actually going to do Capra Monday on Capra Saturday. So the idea here is we know that Frank Capra made a lot of movies, and so we want our guests to tell us their top five favorite movies made by Frank Capra.
Well, I am just sad to say I don't think I've seen any others, but I might have and just don't remember. But this happens to me. I did that same with Jimmy Stewart, but I'm not sure I've seen any other. But I see this one every single year, so I'm going to say this is one through five right now.
As
Maybe
you want to count this five times.
yeah, exactly. But you can give me my homework of what my next two should be, and I will commit.
You're supposed to do the homework before you get to class.
I know, that's true. There's
Okay.
too much to watch this time of year anyway, so I had to watch the 2023 movies.
Okay. All right. That's fair. That is fair. That is a great excuse. It's a good thing you're on all these award committees. That obviously you can't watch Frank Capra stuff. You got to watch recent stuff in order to.
No, but I will. I should. I will. I'm on it.
All right, great. So, Dana, why don't you once again tell people where they can find you?
Sure. My website, dananachman.com, DananaChman.com. And then I'm on Instagram and Facebook, Twitter, all under my name.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. So, Dana, you want to come back tomorrow to finish off your set of episodes?
Sure, that'd be great.
All right. So, until tomorrow, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.